Okay, I'm going to say you're with, this is Truth Quest with Melody. And we got a little bit of a preview on who we have on. Dr. Mike Castle is our guest this evening, and my co-host this evening is Dr. Eric Carlstrom. And this is Truth Quest with Melody. And this is KHENLP FM LP 106.9 Salida. And if you would, and Dr. Carlstrom, my co-host, is a professor of geography at California State University Stanislaus, with nearly 30 years teaching experience. And I'll get into Dr. Castle's credentials in just a minute after I say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and are my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHAN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And I also want to mention that Dr. Carlstrom has a couple of websites, www.naturalclimatechange.us, and you can also type in Water Watch Alliance on Google, and it will bring up his other website. And I also would like to say that if you would like to email the program, it's khen.dj@gmail.com. And for some reason, my mouth is so dry, I can hardly even talk. But luckily, that's what my guest and my co-host gets to do tonight. So I want to say that, I'm really organized here. Okay, Dr. Castle is a certified environmental risk auditor, conducts environmental phased assessments, due diligence for national lending institutions, industry, and environmental organizations, including subsurface investigation, geologic interpretation, core drilling, soil water matrix sample analysis, U.S. EPA testing protocol specifications, analytical interpretation and preparation of reports, and much more. He's a practicing industrial polymer chemist with U.S. patents in coatings and adhesives, development and preparation for investigative scope of works, corrective action plan, remedial action plan, and site post-closure plan, submittal to state environmental agency or U.S. EPA develop synergistic co-trained treatments that are utilized in situ with bacteria to achieve the remediation and cleanup of hydrocarbon contaminants in soils and groundwaters of the U.S., polychlorinated biphenyls and other polynuclear aromatics and other organic, inorganic environmental pollutants, co-developed a remedial process for environmental contaminants referred to as biointegration used in the hydrogeological manipulation of groundwaters and contaminated geologic formations using co-treatments and naturally occurring microbes to remediate the subsurface. And boy, is that a mouthful.
You did very well. I forgot that I sent you that bio. That's an old one.
I found there were several of them there. That's not really the first one you sent, but it happened to be the one I grabbed. I'm sorry.
When the Wizard of Oz, when they came up and gave him a little shot of oil on his jaw, that's what you need there.
Yeah. Well, listen, let me start this off, Michael. It's a pleasure to be able to talk to you. Of course, what we'd like to ask you about tonight is what is being sprayed in our skies and what effects is it having, are these materials having, and perhaps we can get into kind of the big picture type of stuff like what are the goals of these programs. But before we get into that, could you just give us a real quick background on your academic experience? You are a chemist, and that's very, very important for this kind of work. And could you tell us a little bit about how you got involved in this particular subject?
Okay. Let's start with the studies in the college, Indiana University, and then went on to with the bachelor's work that I've done there, and it's sort of a it's sort of a slide through. I mean, it's been ever since 1973 when I first went to St. Clair Community College in Dayton, Ohio. So it was a long haul, but I actually, in fact, was awarded a PhD in honorarium from the World Natural Health Organization, and that was in 2003, and it was for a lifetime work of environmental sustainability and the technologies that were developed for that. And it was awarded by the World Natural Health Organization out of California. Getting involved in it's called chemtrails, ladies and gentlemen. It's not something that some does not like that word, I know, but I know they really kick you in the teeth when you use that. But nonetheless, Will Thomas more or less coined that phrase, and I've been in this battle ever since then with Will Thomas and so many others. But it is aerosolized heavy metal particulates. I became a pilot back in 1981, went on to get my instrument rate back in 92, and then I started seeing all these various aberrant cloud formations and streaks in the sky. They weren't flying on Victor Airways. They weren't flying instrument, let's just say instrument corridors that I was even aware of, but I was up there in proximity of many of these. Well, I noticed my visibility fell from 20 miles on a clear day down to 10 miles. And there was always this chronic haze in the air. I don't know what it was. But I, in fact, made a comment to a registered professional geologist one evening while I was playing cards. And as a matter of fact, that person, in fact, took that comment to Art Bell, and I ended up on his show in January of 2000 talking about these things that were then called chemtrails. That was my intro into this thing, into this nightmarish world of government operations and air farce. I beg your pardon, but I don't really relate to the Air Force as an air force anymore. It's an air farce, the current era. But the problem being there's so many federally approved contractors in this debacle, it's unbelievable. So I just began my course of action of my own research. Of course, I do environmental investigations. I'm a chemist. So I found out many things, and the first thing I, in fact, came across was they're trying to modify the weather. Not only were they trying to modify the weather, but they, in fact, are trying to patch holes in the ozone layer. That's what landed me on Art Bell's show in January of 2000. So it's been a constant add to what the heck are they doing, what are they spraying, what are these chemistries. Started coming across analyses. Most of them, in fact, were begat using regional air sampling information that I was, in fact, able to get. I looked through that, and I just couldn't figure out. There's no natural source for these. There's no environmental baseline whatsoever. Why is there barium in these? Why is there aluminum and various tetroxides and just a potpourri of unbelievable amounts of inorganic and heavy metals and transition metals and carbonates. The list was endless. But then I noticed that, in fact, they were doing more than one thing. They were, in fact, manipulating the weather, but at the same time, then I found their patents on creating drought, inducing drought. Then I looked over in 19... let's just say I look backwards into time. I've seen that in 1992, they started, in fact, utilizing these types of technologies down around Texas. Matter of fact, they used to, in fact, just completely bone dry those farmers down there. And, in fact, just when they get, by the time they get the seed planted, in fact, they just hit a gully washer and they wash them out. Seen the same types of technology were used over in Australia. So what is this going on here? So it's more than just weather manipulation. It's actually using the weather almost as a weapon to drive farmers out. So I got busy, got on the internet. At the time it was dial-up, and you can't believe how unbelievably slow that was. But checking records and working with people that I knew in Texas who would, in fact, do due diligence types investigations and finding out that these properties literally hundreds of thousands and thousands of acres, in fact, were sold off at stressed farm sales at auctions, share sales, because the farmers, in fact, owned them, could not afford them because they just kept getting either droughted out or flooded out. They just could not plant anything. They couldn't make any money. They went out of business. Who bought these up? In fact, they were principally the food conglomerate of this world. And it doesn't really matter who, in fact, you put in there, whether it's Monsanto or Cargill or pick one, Archer Daniels Midland. It was just all these massive, huge corporate farms, and the only thing that they raised back then, beginning in the mid-90s, was genetically mutated organisms. So I became involved in researching that. So then,
Can I interrupt you here for a second, Michael?
Certainly.
And I would like to get back to the GMOs, but you mentioned the droughts being caused in Texas, and I've watched a few DVDs and videos and read some about chemtrails. And supposedly, if you have metallic salts that are put into the atmosphere, upper troposphere and stratosphere, and then you hit it with electromagnetic waves, radio waves, etc., this will excite and warm the atmosphere and induce drought. So would you suspect that even then there was a component of, electromagnetic radiation like from HARP, or would you suggest that drought inducement was by the metallic salts alone?
Actually, it was by and you're absolutely correct on that, Eric. It was, in fact, the drought inducement, in fact, utilized the HARP wave. Microwaves, in fact, would excite this in the air. They could get it to move in a certain vector at a very high velocity and pull lots of wind with it. They could create wind, but they would also be desiccating the atmosphere over that entire region. So there were so many tricks that they used. Actually, they used this one here in the United States for many years. They would, in fact, spray these chemtrails all over the area of the most available moisture in the atmosphere, which was over the Great Lakes region. And, in fact, they would just mop up all this water and moisture vapor that was in the air. And then they, in fact, would zap that with the microwave from, well, back then it was Gakana, Alaska, was the only HARP back then. And you could just literally see these take off in a southeasterly direction. And by doing that, they could pull. It would create a low-pressure gradient, and it would, in fact, pull the jet stream, the north jet stream, very, very far south. And they could just virtually pull a Siberian Arctic front right over the entire map of the United States, really on a diagonal that went up to, across through the Bering Straits of Alaska. But they would just pull these massive, huge, they were pulling areas of atmosphere and the moisture and the cold that went along with it. And they'd done that for years. I mean, we'd always get these Arctic clippers coming through. Well, you could see on the various types of radar that was available back then that they were doing this. So, it was just such a menagerie of chemical reactivity at the same time they were, in fact, using the HARP's electromagnetic to create these massive pressure gradients and, in fact, pushing and pulling the jet stream. And they had this thing in it like a twist balloon.
So this is, as you say, going back to the early 90s?
Yeah, in the mid-90s, about the mid-90s.
There was a drought in California about that time, I believe, that Rosalind Peterson was talking to us about. Very, very mm-hmm. impressive drought. I think there was one in the early 90s, and I have to look at my notes to see when else. But are you familiar with that particular one?
I had heard of that, yes, but I more or less focused on the breadbasket because I had discovered that someone, in fact, intentionally was creating or using weather, in fact, to drive farmers out of business. And I suspected at the time, and in fact, I wrote that in my first paper in 2003, The Methodic Demise of Natural Earth. It's called the food weapon.
Dr.
And that's exactly what it is.
Dr.
Go ahead.
Castle, There was a point.
Excuse me, Melody. Okay. I'd like to just follow up on that. The Great Central Valley of California provides a very high percentage of the food to the United States. So when you're talking about the breadbasket, we really can't ignore California at all. So I would just throw that in there. Mm.
What I was going to ask you is
25%, something like that.
Okay. I was going to mention too that, you know, when you're talking, there was a point a couple of years ago when they were having the battle over the Trans-Texas Corridor. There was like a front parked for almost a month, on the same place where they had, this corridor was planned. And I mean, it was just flooding the heck out of, areas of Texas. And it just made us curious, there, those of us that were kind of watching this. So they can actually park fronts, too.
They can manipulate the weather in virtually any way they can, and they are opportunists at the same time. And by the way, who are they? It's a triangulation between NOAA. And as a matter of fact, I'll just be very blunt with everybody about weather. Weather, in fact, is contrived. It's assembled by those wizards down at NOAA. As a matter of fact, all the information is taken. It's sent on a program to Belgium, and that Cray computer over there, in fact, does all the work that needs to be done to assign the task for the aircraft. They file the flight plans, whomever they are. In fact, they purchase the chemicals that are needed. It's just like automatic, you know, it's really busy stuff to see them, how they do this. But NOAA is directly involved in these weather systems. So when they are able to, I said they're opportunists too. When we had the Gulf disaster, I of course was hopeful in getting something that I developed, back in the mid to late 90s, something called AmeriHAS, which is crude oil solidifier. It's a fuel solidifier. That was some of the things that I had worked with a company that I had put together back in that particular era. And this was along with my environmental consulting business. But I couldn't get in. They wouldn't let me in. They found out that this stuff works extremely well, and there's videotapes that went out across the internet about it, YouTube and everything else. But be it as it may, there was such a massive pall of hydrocarbons and other materials that were in these vaporous clouds that were coming up off the Gulf of Mexico, and they were drenching the entire from Louisiana, Arkansas, all the way up through here with these clouds that, in fact, were benzene laden. Not only were they benzene laden, they had all the chemicals of the Corex in it, which is 2-butoxyethanol and glycol ethers, and they had super surfactants in there. They just had just about everything a wizard, in fact, could want to put into that stuff, and we got it all. And that killed more foliage and plants than you can imagine. But see, that was, in fact, sort of on their radar scope to do that. They used these benzene clouds, in fact, to do just that. So they're by no stretch of the imagination lacking creativity when it comes to killing things or using the weather to do that.
Yeah, are you talking about the BP oil spill?
Yes, sir.
Or yeah, so this is quite recent then.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I wanted to put the tag on NOAA because NOAA controls this weather. NOAA, in fact, makes the, let's just say if you want your weather to change, well, you just have to make a great big contribution. If you're one of the big GMO companies or whatever it might be, you know, that's, in fact, what they do. It's all about the money.
So if you are a water company or a private water company or maybe even, you know, public but private, then you could possibly affect a situation to where maybe you could create a situation so that you could acquire more water, or if you had people fighting you or something along this line. Am I making sense?
Yes, you are. Or you can create a hurricane And in fact, we gotta have water. We gotta have water and ice. Well, guess what? Your little water company and ice company gonna do very, very, very well. Cause that's the first thing in is when there's a hurricane is water and potable water and something like a bottled water is king when it comes to those types of things. Or maybe it's one of these companies that sells plywood. You know, we gotta protect our, we gotta hammer the plywood up and they go through this. This is just a, this is in fact a system. This is planned destruction. They believe in the chaos of what they can in fact contrive with weather. Look at Atlanta, Georgia. They can virtually dry it up like a bone, and they did. Or
that
they
was
can
also
in fact
a water
turn
war.
Around and fill up the aquifers again.
Wasn't there a water war going on at that point, too, with Coca-Cola or some? Are you?
Which happens to be in Atlanta, Georgia, yes.
Okay.
See, don't take anything down as far as could they have done that. I assure you, whatever it is, in fact, they can manipulate just darn near anything.
So if you have
now,
a ski industry,
we're talking about
too.
A triangle, NOAA, and two other things, I'd gather. But what else was in that?
Well, NOAA and the U.S. Air Force, in fact, which they published a paper many years ago, then in fact said they're going to control the weather by 2025.
Right.
So then again, that's why I don't. I show no respect for them whatsoever, but they, but this is also along with an entourage of federally approved contractors that just you can't shake a stick at. These are both from the boys from Arkansas. I mean, from Tyson. I mean, it just goes everywhere. The players that are in this, but there's just so many. I don't think anybody could write a paper like that because you're virtually talking about all the things that are part of Wall Street. So when it comes to these aircraft, I mean, some of the largest biotechnology companies, like even where I'm located here in Ohio, one extremely huge biotechnology companies. Oh, yeah, they're in fact are in flu vaccines and, oh, they got the whole thing. Well, they can manipulate the weather, in fact, to make it, to make whooping cough part of the regime that they need to get things out there. And, of course, the public health service, just every time you turn the TV on, there they are promoting get vaccine for, even though these vaccines have been shown to have acute toxicity, whether it's the H1N1, whether it's a flu virus, influenza virus, a whooping cough, whatever, they got extreme problems with the side effects, and we don't need to go into all that. But see, it's an industry. That's how this whole thing works. But that company, this biotech company, that's 1/3 of the employment in some of these larger metropolitan areas. They also have a spray fleet of aircraft down in a subsidiary company located in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. All Gulfstream 9 jet aircraft, all outfitted with spray detail on those aircraft. And they use them all the time. Does this make sense to you?
Yeah, of course. You know, those who have been looking up in the sky, and it's an interesting process that people seem to go through. You know, they at different points in their life, they seem to be able to actually look up in the sky and see it. It's almost like that Bob Dylan line, how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? But yeah, at some point people start looking up there and they see the crisscrosses and the X's, and they see these high, chemtrails or persistent contrails, as Rosalind Peterson likes to call them. They
right.
see them spread out until you get this white haze up there. And then you've got an artificial high cloud, sometimes. And as you say, there's more than one, goal involved in the spraying, but it's not hard to see the spraying. It happens very regularly.
Mm-hmm.
So what you've talked about so far in terms of drought inducement in Texas is actually, a form of weather warfare, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
This is what you would do to an enemy in a military situation, but now it's being done to our own people, I guess, for business advantage of whatever corporation, whatever bidder can manage to pay the government enough, the U.S. Air Force and NOAA or whoever else is involved. So now you have a for-profit system of weather modification, meeting, I guess, many, many people's goals, such as Los Angeles is famous for their North American Water and Power Alliance, NAWPA, which has been very, very clever in bringing water to Los Angeles, which, of course, is a very large metropolitan area and needs lots of water. According to Rosalind Peterson, there's several ongoing weather modification schemes in Wyoming and Colorado to make it rain and snow more there to increase the flow of the Colorado River, et cetera. Do you know about that? Is that true?
That's exactly accurate. That's exactly accurate. We've watched this. I've got lots of friends that are over in that neck of the woods, if you will, and we communicate all the time, and they just they keep me very informed. And in fact, they go through the detail of why they're doing this. Well, what are they doing that for? It just never ends. It's really endless. The same thing happens on the East Coast, but for different reasons. The thing that you see in the highest levels are called high altitude reflectance, and in fact, they're trying to push back various types of actinic light form and from the sun, from solar radiation. It's useless. And then there's someone that I met years ago back in the year 2000, Clifford Carnicom. I'm certain you've heard of him. Very, very brilliant man, has done fabulous work. But Clifford and I stood in front of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in 2001 and pumped our fist into the air, telling them to stop spraying the chemtrails. Yeah, that was Clifford Carnicom and myself. We both gave speeches. Many did. Lori Kramer, just it's endless. But the point is, you know, we've been able to identify these hoaxers, because that's what this is, because the Air Force, in fact, always said this was just a big hoax. It was on us. Well, the point I wanted to make about Clifford Carnicom, in 2006, I believe, he identified, using some mathematical studies, he's a very brilliant man, he found out he actually drew a model to show that if you have barium oxide or barium compounds, the specific heat value of barium itself was, in fact, could irradiate enough to actually cause this phenomena called global warming. Then we started matching up where they started taking their studies from. We find out that the oceans, in fact, heated in areas where they apparently had these large chemtrail sightings. It lands the same way. In fact, they were causing global warming by the utilization of the barium compounds, which, in fact, gave you an adulterated specific heat value, in fact, but no one would touch that. So actually, they created the global warming and the entire hoax itself by the use of their chemistry. Like I said, they weren't dumb.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because when I found out there was
doesn't
weather,
that blow you away, Melody?
Weather modification, and I'm going, and then yet we're saying man caused global warming. Well, yeah, it is if they're modifying the weather, But I also want to state that this is Dr. Mike Castle and my co-host Dr. Eric Carlstrom, and we're getting into the aspects of the chemtrails and weather modification, and I also want to say that we'll be following this two-hour interview. We'll also have an extra hour where I have Deborah Dupre and Rebecca Campbell on, who will be following up with a little bit of some of the issues that we were talking about, and I'm sure you will get into a little bit on the BP oil spill. So
certainly.
Okay. Well, if I could just pick up where we left off now, I've just written the paper. I guess I'm in the throes of completing it. It's kind of an open letter to policymakers and colleagues on the disproofs of man-caused, catastrophic, unprecedented man-caused global warming. Basically, the climate record shows, generally speaking, warming in the first 45 years of the 20th century, cooling between 1945 and 1975, and then a little bit of warming. And now we're not talking about much here, but a little bit based on the averages that they can make. Now, the averages themselves are highly suspect, but those three trends seem to stand out, that you have a warming between 1975 or so and 1998, and then basically cooling since 1998. So, of course, the global warming alarmists are telling us that the warming between 1975 and 1998 especially coincides with our increased use of fossil fuels. So, therefore, it's, you know, our industrial activities that are causing this, and that this is the worst, you know, possible catastrophe. So we have to have a one world government to protect us from global warming. Well, you know, from a scientist's point of view, it's very easy to go back into the historical and geologic records and show that nature does much, 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 much greater warmings and coolings on its own, and we can pretty much determine how much and when, you know, pretty well. And I, in writing my paper, I've come up to the idea, come up with looking into Climate Gate, in which the Met Office or the Hadley Climate Unit in East Anglia University in London really falsified a lot of data, destroyed the raw data, homogenized the other data, and we're doing all kinds of unethical, unscientific things. Likewise, NASA was participating in those kinds of activities.
Yes, sir.
And so was the New Zealand government. They call it Kiwi Gate down there. And so was the Australian government. So all of these four climate federal bureaucracies have been guilty of the same kind of falsification of data, hiding of data, destruction of data. And when I say falsification, the pattern seems to be to depress the values of the temperatures in the early 20th century and inflate the values in the late 20th century so you can draw a line that goes up and therefore scare people. You know, assuming that the warming that we've seen or the trends we've seen are natural, which I guess we no longer really can assume, if not much, it's tiny compared to, you know, what nature has done in the past and can do. Now, in your opinion, at what point in the 20th century would weather modification become, shall we say, an equal partner or as strong as natural climate change? I mean, I, as a geography professor, I'm always going to root for nature because, I mean, 20,000 years ago, we had a 2-mile-thick glacier covering Canada and coming down into New York City and Chicago and right across the Midwest. And we know that in past interglacials, the conditions were considerably warmer and the vegetation zones all went to the north. The tree lines went higher in altitude and higher in latitude. And so we can track these big changes in climate. They're natural. What I see with the man-caused, literally, you know, human-caused climate change with weather modification is something that seems to be kind of haphazard. It doesn't seem to have a deliberate goal. Please let me know if you disagree, because it could be that they are trying to warm or trying to cool the planet. I don't know.
Well, I think it just depends on where you're at and how much money you got. I'm with you, Eric. I'm for nature, and I've told many people, been on many shows, I've been asked, if they stop the chemtrails and all this battering with electromagnetic and scalar and all that, would we get back to a natural weather system? They killed the natural systems by their high altitude reflectance. Of course, you know that our weather is predominantly, at the very generation of something called Coriolis forces. And the Coriolis forces in the upper atmosphere, they've in fact been able to super cool that atmospherically at the highest levels of our atmosphere. Super cooling, that will eventually find its way back down here. So it won't be global warming. It's going to be the most massive ice age you ever in fact seen. And I in fact put that in that paper that I wrote in 2003. If they turn the chemtrails off tomorrow, which would be a dream, first of all, it's one of the largest industries in the entire world, but that's not supposed to be known, and you're not supposed to talk about that stuff. You know, you're crazy. You talk about that stuff.
Let's go back to the cooling. We had cooling 1945, 1975. Scientists of the world were alarmed about the coming ice age. And, This made the cover of Time magazine and New Science and various other popular publications.
And we had volcanism back then as well.
Well, yeah, but we seem to have a cooling trend, and of course, those who have studied the impact of climate change on natural systems know that cooling is much more damaging than warming, that generally speaking, humans and other creatures do better when it's warmer and do less well. There are more extinctions and more shorter lifespans, et cetera, during cold climates. So it is fairly confusing in terms of what, if there is an overall goal that is being pursued. I mean, apparently Bill Gates is spending $4 million on a cloud whitening program, which would increase the haze of the planet in the upper atmosphere, creating high-level cirrus clouds that are artificial. And would that have the net effect of deflecting incoming solar radiation, or would it also have the net effect of trapping terrestrial radiation heat from the Earth, therefore warming the atmosphere? I mean, the jury is not entirely decided on that, because there are both things that can happen. But it is apparent that he wants more haze in the sky.
That's Bill Gates. You know, I'd like to have more fish in the rivers and stuff like that, but that's just Bill Gates. But I'm no respecter of the man, because I know that he subscribes to the genocidal ways of things anyways, with his mosquitoes that inject people. So, you know, just the heck with Bill Gates. I don't care. He's one of them as far as I'm concerned. Because he's got lots of money. He thinks he's an elitist. And I wonder if Gates knows that these people that he's dealing with at the higher end of this, they actually eat human beings. I know. Well, you shouldn't say stuff like that. Anyways, we got all the proof we need, but you know, you don't know who you're messing with here. But if they in fact quit cutting trees down, that would make the most predominant. If they stop spraying chemtrails tomorrow and quit cutting the largest oxygenator that we've got on the face of this earth, then we might have a chance for natural weather, natural Coriolis forces, and the sea system and the seas, in fact, to change around. As far as carbon dioxide, that's their goal. Their goal is, in fact, to eliminate that. You just can't get more idiotic than a thought process or a brain that thinks like that. So I don't think that they're human anyways. That's why I don't think, because they haven't let that sink in yet, that carbon dioxide is the life-giving gas, as well as oxygen is what is given off from those that consume the carbon dioxide and given off as a gas. So, you know, I guess it could go anywhere anybody wanted to go with it, Eric.
Well, the meteorologist Richard Lindzen said, if you control carbon, you control life. And of course, plan A of our bureaucratic government, I guess, of the Obama is the kind of Kyoto Protocol type legislation that would set caps on fossil fuel emissions, limit our carbon footprint, tax us, and therefore, of course, decrease our economic level, because if you scale back the use of energy, you scale back wealth correspondingly. But as you say, yeah, carbon dioxide is a miracle gas. It's a plant fertilizer. It's the basis of photosynthesis. It's hardly a pollutant. And furthermore, we've talked to Dr. Tim Ball, who tells us, along with other scientists, that most of the capability of carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas to absorb and then re-radiate terrestrial heat is accomplished by the first 40 parts per million in the atmosphere. And then increasing amounts thereafter have less and less of an absorbing effect. So even if we were to double CO2, this would cause virtually a negligible rise in temperature.
If you've got moisture in that air column, too.
Yeah, and there's
you have a cooling effect of it, so.
Yeah, this whole thing is a hoax in the sense that.
You'll say, flip your coin or mine.
Well, we're being told a bunch of lies, but my question to you is, I was just reading a paper where somebody said, yeah, there is man-caused global warming, and they were talking about KiwiGate and AustraliaGate, but they were saying the man-caused global warming is the perception of warming that is created when the people who falsify the data lower the temperature values in the early 20th century and then raise them in the later 20th century. So then you have the perception of warming. But then you're saying we may actually have warming, global warming in the late 20th century due to all these Air Force and NOAA activities.
So, right.
Would you say that then, as far as you're concerned, that humankind now, with these weather modification schemes, is in a position to overpower nature?
Well, I think that, in fact, all these that are involved, in fact, should be treated as criminals, because that's what they are. They're air pirates. I mean, that they've got no rights whatsoever. They're in complete violation of whatever idiot that, in fact, came to the United States, went to the United Nations and signed a treaty in 72 and 76 that said weather, in fact, would not be used as a weapon. Duh. That's exactly what's going on. And they're using it. They've already used it in Africa to virtually kill how many untold hundreds of thousands of Ethiopians and the droughts. And it doesn't even shake a stick to things like the killing at Pol Pot. There's another character, Zygmunt Brzezinski. I tell you, this man, in fact, needs to be put in chains for the rest of his life. This is one of the most evil, wicked men, and he's not a man, by the way, but he's one of the most evil people that I, in fact, if there was an award, an international award for the most wicked and treacherous minds of this world, I would categorize Zygmunt Brzezinski in along with William Teller and Adolf Hitler. And I'd throw a couple more in there, too, because these are the minds of death. That's all they, in fact, have on their mind is death. And at the hands, and he's nothing but a taskmaster for all these minions throughout history. And these, Kissinger and Brzezinski are older than dirt, Eric. Just look at these. They're older than dirt, but they're still at it. But they, in fact, make certain that all these operations are coordinated, so it's going to impact humans at the highest levels, and at the same time make their banker buddies happy, their banker gangsters happy. And see, it's just endless. That darkness just never stops. It's all about the sign of the serpent. The sign of the serpent is the money, the snake. So, you know, not to go on a diatribe about that right now, but what I'm saying is all these things that we've got in front of us, if we could, in fact, stop them tomorrow, we'd have to talk about how that's possible to do that. They're meeting in Cancun. They got a real pushback at their Copenhagen conference. They got a real pushback. Well, we're not certain. Nobody's going to take credit for that, but nonetheless, it did. And Haiti was the first one to walk out of that conference. Well, you see what happened to Haiti? They also control scalar warfare. Scalar weaponry, in fact, which are known, in fact, were invented to cause and create earthquakes, massive earthquakes, and they do it every single day. Let me clue you. This is just me. But they're tapping, they crack the crust at the deep water horizon at the Morocco, at the crustal plate there. In fact, they cracked the crust. Well, you didn't hear about that because it just magically went away. But there's oil streaming out of that crack, which is going right towards a point where Baja California meets the ocean in the Baja Gulf, and because that's where it enjoins the San Andreas Fault system, which goes all the way down crustally, all the way down through across the Cucos Plate. And the South American plate, but all these, in fact, at the Caribbean plate is where the deep water horizon was at. Right on the opposite side of the polar Earth, we've got them tapping at Yemen. They've got these staccato kind of earthquakes, and all of a sudden, I've seen some people that, in fact, on the internet, they were saying, "This is really strange. Well, I've never seen patterns of earthquakes like it. It's like they were like a shotgun blast, you know, like throwing rocks at this, trying to get this system to fail." And the plate that Yemen sets on, in fact, is in direct opposition, and it's a hinge plate that if they, in fact, are able to make the entire crustal plate form itself and fall down, that oil that we used to get at, well, 3, 5, and 10,000 feet below the ground, you're not going to be able to get to it anymore. So will we have a peak oil? If you can't get to the oil, I'll guarantee you gas is going to be more than $30 a gallon. Does this make any sense to you? But they're using that same weaponry, in fact, to do just that, to mess up all of these natural systems. Like, it's some of the things that we discovered by investigation of the Gulf oil disaster, it in fact raised the hair up on the back of my head. It did. I mean, I was just flabbergasted, because they will stop at nothing to destroy this earth. So what they're doing at Cancun is, in fact, wanting to get this all, they're going to force this down the throats of the American people. And the only thing I can, in fact, tell people to do is pray that it doesn't happen, in fact, and will them to, in fact, I don't know, maybe that Bogota drug gang, in fact, just might want to take a little trip to Cancun and check on these guys, you know, because they're a gang too. They're a big gang. They got a lot more weapons than those guys, but yeah, they'd be doing us a big service. In
other words, you just get them fighting among themselves.
These are gangs. We're talking about pirates here. So anyways, I'm just trying to be literal about it, but at the same time, take off this respecter shell, because I've got zero respect for any of these beings. None.
Now, if they can do that, they can also create tsunamis or earthquakes or hurricanes.
Yes.
and all these. And how about tornadoes? And
absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely, they can take out. And if you look at the incidence of tornadoes in certain areas, they're trying to depopulate by, well, if they rip your house and your ranch and your farm up and so on and so forth, and they send 60 off in through an area in one day, and it just takes out whole cities and little cities and all these little burgs and, you know, what's the remnants of the crossroads towns and so, I mean, what America's built on.
And if you
can take enough of them out, and they probably are not going to rebuild, they'll probably just go away. But see, they accomplish their objective, because it's just like the floodplains, like they did in Nashville. They'll gollywash the, and they used the Gulf oil disaster to open up that Nashville flood all across the eastern part of Tennessee. We watched them do it.
Well, the beauty of weather warfare from the point of view of military individuals would be plausible deniability. That you'd be able to say, it's just nature. So then the question is, how can you distinguish a natural hurricane or a natural earthquake from one that's man-caused?
I don't think that that's possible, other than the fact that when Katrina came ashore, someone actually spotted and took a photograph of lightning bolts at the top of a hurricane. A major hurricane does not have lightning at its top, ever.
I don't know about that. I mean, there's certainly lightning and thunder and tornadoes are all associated with hurricanes. So a big hurricane like a Category 5 might have lightning. So my question stands in the sense that is there a way to demonstrate that this one is artificial, as opposed to, we can easily tell the difference between an artificial cloud and a natural one. Although I can say that for old timers like me who grew up with natural clouds, but I think youngsters would maybe not be able to tell the difference, because it's all one sky to them, and they've seen a lot of man-made clouds. But I think there's got to be some ways that we can sort out the man-made from the natural. For instance, the Haiti earthquake, many people have said that's a Harp earthquake. Some people have said the Chile earthquake is a man-made earthquake. But the fact is that we have earthquakes naturally. So to prove that it's man-made as opposed to natural is problematic, isn't it? Is it not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. But then again, why would you want to prove that it was or it was not? Because if you prove that it is, like I asked you this question now, but if you prove that it is an unnatural, a man-made earthquake or a man-made tsunami or a man-made hurricane, my question is, what are you going to do and who are you going to call?
You know, I think, like I say, that.
Well, I'm just asking a literal question, you know.
if you can get people to start looking up in the sky and asking questions at this point, that's progress. If you can give them some hard information, you know, like Cliff Carnicom and others have tried to do, and like yourself, that's going a step further, you know. So it's a matter of waking up, to this incredibly large, generally speaking, covert operation or series of operations. So I would imagine that if there were a critical mass of individuals who started to understand what's going on, then things might change.
What about if you're having where you're creating snow and then all your trees are dying because what they're doing is it's bringing a something like aluminum that gets into the ground and the tree absorbs it and it kills it, yet they're blaming it on the beetle. Are you aware of anything like that?
Yeah, I wrote about that, Melody, in my 2003 paper, where there's a little microbe called Endomycorrhizia, and it's a little wraparound fungal form that, in fact, is the only thing that can transmute mineral and nutrients from the soils or whatever soils it might be in, the feeder root tendrils into the tree itself through those, and that's extremely susceptible to the salts of various metals, including aluminum. Matter of fact, barium and aluminum seem it to be have the highest toxicity, propensity for toxicity, and kills them off. Now, we didn't discover that. Someone else in a British research, in fact, back in 2001, had studied this and found out that it was, in fact, these metal salts, in fact, that were so toxic to these trees. And what they were doing, they wouldn't outrightly kill the tree, but they would starve. And, of course, when you bring down their level of immunity because of the non-mineralization, they don't have nutrient pickup, because of the die-off of these microbes, natural microbes, then the beetles, in fact, can just haul away. They can just bore right in. And that's what happened all throughout the Montana, Colorado, many places. In fact, those same things happen. They were weakened by these chemicals, in fact, and it killed very, very critical microbial life forms, and in fact the trees just started dying from infestation of various types of bugs, and beetles in fact seem to thrive in that.
So that's
it's not
provable.
Just by accident that all this in fact happened.
Okay, that's provable. I mean, that they're finding the concentrations of aluminum and barium extremely high in these soils, right?
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
They have. And they continue to do that. Now they've got a problem with not only heavy metals and transition metals and the salts and the toxicities thereof out and outright to plants and vegetation and soils. It's killing all kinds of the microbial life form. In fact, it's amazing. Hardly anything will grow in some of these soils anymore. No matter how much chemicals you put on them.
Isn't
put more chemicals on to make things grow. That just doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't work.
Isn't Monsanto developing some kind of a plant that's kind of aluminum resistant? Or are you familiar with something like that?
I heard Monsanto, in fact, is now more or less bragging that some of their seeds, in fact, the GMOs, in fact, exclusively, in fact, can thrive in highly impacted or contaminated soils. So, you know, the corn, in fact, seems to shimmer more, therefore reflecting more sunlight back out into space. It's the most idiotic thing you ever heard in your life, but I swear that's what they've got.
Well, I've tried in my own little way to try to figure out what the progression of policies have been, and There's a book by Larry Abraham, 1993, talks about, called The Greening, talks about the report from Iron Mountain, which is a fairly secret group.
Yes, sir.
Reported in the early 1960s, I believe. And, the report was on the possibility and desirability of peace. And, according to, there's question about whether it's a forgery or whether it's a legitimate document. But, basically, it says, look, if we're going to have peace, you've got to find a way to maintain the social structure of the society, the hierarchy, the concentration of wealth, et cetera, the common enemy, the threat of a common enemy. And so let's use the environmental movement as a surrogate for war. And so then we start to see George Kennan pick up that theme in an article in 1970 in Foreign Affairs, which is the Journal of the Council on Foreign Relations. And George Kennan, very influential individual, he had been the architect of the Cold War policy between the Soviet Union and the United States, basically our Cold War policy, our containment policy. And then we see the whole thing, the idea taken up by the Club of Rome a few years later, 1973 and 1974, saying, it's going to be the threat of global warming that's going to unite us into one world government and things like that. And then along comes Maurice Strong with the United Nations, and he writes into the terms of reference of the Convention on Climate Change, which morphs into the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. He defines climate change as the change that is caused by humans. They're saying, and then of course this became then the rationale for governments pouring enormous sums of money into research into man-caused global warming and ignoring the much more important contributions of natural warming. And then if we cut closer to the present, we see our czar of science, John Holdren, who is a physicist who wrote a book with the Ehrlichs in 1977 called Ecosystems, in which he called for population control by a central world authority. And he says in February 2010, the threat of global warming is so dire that we're going to have to start looking at geoengineering fixes. We'll have to fix the climate. So, and if you put that kind of series of policy statements that have happened over the last 50 years, alongside the fact that the big scare in the mid-20th century was global cooling, and then the temperature started going up around 1977, do those two dovetail? How do they dovetail?
Well, no. First of all, you've got a very, very good working knowledge of this whole scam as we come up to today. I mean, you do. I commend you on that. I didn't think anybody else had ever read Iron Mountain.
No,
besides
I've got
myself,
it too.
A bunch of other people. But anyways, no, I mean, it's just amazing how far back this stuff has been planted. You know, I mean, and how they brought this forward. And everybody along the way that has something to say about we've got to do this, we've got to do that, they've all made money off of this. It always seems to involve the money-making deal. I mean, like Maurice Strong. Yeah, he's over there somewhere by you. As a matter of fact, just south of you. That's where he lives, as I understand. He's the one that brought Monsanto into this fold and the GMO and Cargill and Battelle. And it just goes, the list is endless of how they've rigged things, in fact, to complete their genocidal activities. And that's what these all are. But I wanted to say, the troops on the ground are people like Ken Caldera. And if Ken Caldera, he's with the geoengineering bunch, him and Weiss. Ken Caldera, he needs to know, hey, look, the ticket's up. No, we're going to fight you tooth and nail, and geoengineering is dead. You're not going to do it. You're not going to, in fact, try to slide this in, and you're going to stop. Somehow or another, we're going to, in fact, find a way to have you arrested one of these days and drawn up on charges of trying to poison literally millions and millions of people. Also, cruelty to the animals and cruelty to the planet. I don't know how else that you could put charges like that together, but this is who these people are. They're just that wicked.
Let me kind of finish off my little summary. I forgot to mention at the tail end of it there that geoengineering now, the very term geoengineering, is defined as operations of weather modification, et cetera, that are designed to address the problem of global warming. So just like climate change is officially defined in an erroneous way for a policy objective, so is the term geoengineering. Now, geoengineering goes back 50, 60 years, back to World War II when the Brits used chaff to thwart the radar attempts of the Germans when they were, Britain was flying their planes over Germany. And in 1952, the Royal Air Force was seeding clouds over England, which caused a massive flood and a number of deaths. So geoengineering is not new, but we are now being told that geoengineering is going to come into play to quote unquote fix the climate. Now, my question is, this global warming thing, which is a hoax at many levels, do you think that this is, the warming was engineered, or do you think it was contrived only to give the impression of warming?
Dr. Castle, before you answer that, I need to say this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida, Colorado, or Salida.
Bearing in mind that this is a small amount of warming. We're talking, the official records say 1 degree Fahrenheit for the 20th century. A lot of records show no warming in the 20th century. Michael Crichton, Crichton wrote a good book, A State of Fear, showing about 60 different climatographs that show cooling throughout 60 different American cities. Generally, when you look at temperature stations in rural areas, you see cooling rather than warming in the 20th century. So it would appear that there has been an enormous effort to create the perception of warming, but I'm not sure that there has been warming. Now, I think you're right that they can create local warming and they can change local weather. But to change global weather, I don't think we're there yet. But I'm happy to hear your impression.
Well, no, this they can create just about anything they want. If you recall, when Eastland had the HARP, in fact, it was called ionospheric heating, wasn't it? And they can actually focus on a regional area and put enough microwave into that that they could actually heat the Earth from deflection of this beam coming up from Gakana, Alaska. They could deflect it like a pool shot and heat up just an area. I mean, a statewide, or maybe even more compartmentalized than just that. But they've gotten away from all that. Now they, in fact, can do just about anything they want. But so really, wherever they check the temperatures, that's why these things are just aberrant. They're erratic, and they are certainly not certifiable as being the ambient temperatures or the norm by any standard whatsoever, because there's all this manipulation going on. All of this is going on concurrently. So you really can't say, well, heated up over here. Well, no, and now it's heated up. Well, it's cooling down over there, up there. See, what I'm saying is it's a maze. It's a hoax. There's nothing really going on in my and many other millions and millions of people across this planet. This is not going on. Does it say that we should, in fact, curtail our use of aerobically generated hydrocarbons? Because they're not fossils. They're not from fossils. I mean, you're talking about something from Precambrian era that, in fact, was all this oil? No, the Earth is full of oil. The tectonic plates float on oil. That's the lubrication that they have.
Now, we have to distinguish a theory or a hypothesis from a fact. What you've just stated is a hypothesis which most Earth scientists would disagree with. Most Earth scientists would say that the plates, the solid crust, floats on the upper mantle, in which you have kind of a semi-quasi plastic material, and the heat convection moving through that causes the motion of the plates. So you don't read this in textbooks about earth science. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not possible, but we, the problem that I'm seeing is that the American people have a very hard time now distinguishing a hypothesis from a theory from a fact. And there's a lot of people in the government now who give us a wild-ass hypothesis, such as global warming, which has now been disproven many times, and they tell us it's a fact. And they, of course, by repeating it, then they're able to make people believe that it is.
Well, that's, and Eric, they've done the same thing with this thing called peak oil. They've done the same thing. But be it as it may, let me just set that whole thing aside. Should we, in fact, curtail and try to reduce our use of these fuels and combustion into the atmosphere, into the breathable air column? Absolutely we should. But our focus should be there, not what we're doing right now, and in fact trying to eliminate carbon dioxide because it's causing this thing called global warming. That's got to be the most upside down theory I've ever heard in my life. And the reason I can say it's upside down is because it's all covered with money. It's all about the money. So what I'm talking about is being able to, in fact, to do some of these things in on this planet. Well, can we get fuels that we need from something besides oil? Yes, we can. I've done a lot of development, and I can't get anybody's attention, not if they're political, none, because they don't want to touch us. Why? Well, because it involves big agriculture, and they've already got the lion's share of ethanol from corn. And that's Starlink from Monsanto, Starlink corn. Yeah, you know, don't mess with that. I don't want to make alcohol out of corn. I want to make it out of sweet potatoes. Just like they do over in Tillotsonburg, Ontario. 10 million gallons, hundreds of millions of gallons of alcohol made out of sweet potatoes and millet. Not 1 gram made from ethanol made from corn. They won't do it. But, in fact, I developed these materials that I've used in my car for years when I make them. But, in fact, I've made alcohol out of sweet potatoes, and, in fact, I blended it with an orange oil or a terpene of any kind, pine oil, and it burns beautifully in a 96 Pontiac Grand Prix. And the mileage is unbelievable. The toxicity of it is virtually, the carbon monoxide levels are extremely low. So I'm just trying to say, it's been tested in its diesel's capabilities by reversing this recipe. Works great. But it's not the only thing out there. There's so many things that can be done, but don't go the route that's been laid out in front of us of use all the groundwater to make this ethanol to put in your fuel tank, so you can drive somewhere. No, that's part of the insanity that still continues this day. But you can make so many things if you, in fact, take it away from, you gotta have stockholders, you gotta have profits, gotta have profitability, we gotta make a lot of money off this, you know. Grab it out of the hands of the oil companies first. That's the only way we're going to be able to survive on the surface of this planet. Cause I tell you, have you got 40 grand to buy a GM Volt? I don't. I don't have any monies like that, and the vast majority of Americans don't have those kind of funds. In fact, they won't make an investment. Because, well, it wasn't that long ago. You said you're up in years. You remember you could buy a really nice ranch home in the country for like $25,000, $30,000? That was a mortgage back then. So in this world right now, there's so many things we can do. But we've got to get this monster off of our backs. We've got to get the chemtrail stopped. And, you know, I've got some concepts I've put together on how to do that. Something I wrote in 2003 also is called the Unified Atmospheric Preservation Act. And it's been updated to 2008. And I, in fact, talk about this world's atmosphere as a unified breathable air column, which is exactly what it is. It's not just ours. It's every living thing that's on this planet, that's on the surface. It is theirs as well. But they're just eradicating the planet. It's my belief, and this is a theory, Eric, since you're kind of pointing on that point, this is a theory. I think they're purposely manipulating and changing our entire atmosphere to suit their own needs. And that's why I keep saying I don't believe many of these are actually human. They're another type of being, but they don't like the atmosphere that we have. They'd like a very low oxygen levels, very thin atmospheres, high mountainous climates, and so on and so forth. So, but they're changing our entire, they're changing all the paradigms of our natural environments. Everything is changing. The oceans are changing. Rosalind Peterson, bless her heart, she talks consistently and chronically about what the Navy wants to do and kill off 11.7 million marine animals. Why? Well, because they got this weapon, this scalar weaponry that we talked about before, ultrasonic, low, ultrasound, low frequency sound, sonic waves, not ultra, low frequency waves. I mean, in the very low hertz range, and in fact, they're going to communicate with this, but they can also cause earthquakes with it. They can kill, outrightly kill whales with it and porpoises and marine. 11.7 million marine animals will perish at the hands of the United States Navy. Those are pirates, I tell you. Those are not Navy. That's not the Navy I knew. I was in the U.S. Coast Guard. Ever since the Gulf disaster debacle, in fact, I in fact don't even tell people that anymore because I'm so ashamed of this piece of dung called Commandant Allen. I called for his absolute taking down and resignation the first week of the Gulf oil disaster because he's not a part of the U.S. Coast Guard. He's an appointee by the White House. I know I kind of went off on many different directions here, but I understand the problem that we've got is being able to do something with the technology that we've used now for, what, about 100 years based on oil. We can change that, but we've got to take it in steps that we can all still survive in being able to do that. Not letting the government, in fact, take the high hand, in fact, that you've got to do this and you've got to eat this and you can only have this. No, that's not the answer. That's not the solution, and I do not subscribe to it.
Well, of course, that is the conclusion that that our ruling elite wants to come to and has come to, and then wants to make us all fall in line. They're looking for some kind of a world dictatorship with them in charge.
Yes, sir.
When Melody mentioned my websites, I've got naturalclimatechange.us, I've got waterwatchalliance.us. I've also got one that's got more than those two probably put together called 911NWO.com, 911NewWorldOrder.com. And, that website gets into the, I've listened to Judy Wood talk about directed energy weapons being the probable cause of what do we call dustification of the World Trade Center buildings because they didn't collapse, they just returned to dust. Which I think is a very interesting tie-in with this, because if we're looking at directed energy being used with HAARP and various other kinds of weather modification schemes, and then to think that, and of course those have been going on for 20 years plus, if you look
yes,
at
sir.
The Soviet stuff with the woodpecker signal goes back into
right.
the 80s and even 70s, it becomes an interesting tie-in that both the 911 fraud and the chemtrails fraud may have a connection to these Tesla technologies, which are a century old, but
mm-hmm.
they were classified, they were kept under wraps, and now they're being used without the public's knowledge or consent, and these are extraordinarily powerful technologies. So that's a very interesting angle, the Tesla angle, the fact that these are covert operations. We're probably looking at one of the largest, probably the largest covert operation in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
The American people have not been notified. They've not been consulted. They've not given their permission for this. Neither have the people of the world.
But many have. Don't forget, many have. There's a lot of us out here that are keenly aware of what's going on. We've enlightened a lot of them. I don't know that we'll ever get to all of them because some of them, in fact, they're part of the system that is in fact in play right now. They work for these. I mean, like I said, this one company over here with the U.S. Air Force, they enjoy a $2.7 billion grant along with that corporation with the U.S. Air Force for research. $2.7 billion. Well, that means there's a whole lot of employment over here.
Yeah.
So
yes,
getting those people to look up and understand what's going on, they really don't care. As long as they, in fact, continue doing what they're doing. That's all they care about.
Right.
And you're crazy.
Yeah. And I mentioned, I think, in our last interview with Bruce Gagnon, who's into weather warfare, not weather warfare, space warfare, that in watching Cliff Carnicom's movie called Chemtrails, he's got a section in the middle there where he shows, he scrolls down through the list of entities and companies and federal agencies that checked out his website after he put up his Carnicom.com. This would have been about 2000 or 1999. And
yes.
So he's putting all this information about chemtrails. And who goes to check it out? Well, it's the U.S. Air Force, U.S. Navy, U.S. Army, the Senate, you know, just about every federal agency you can think, the Government Accounting Office, and plus all the pharmaceuticals and all the Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, all the big military contractors, plus, you know, various health agencies. So he's got a list of about 120 or 160, very revealing list. So these people were monitoring the public response to these operations in a quiet way even 10 years ago. Very interesting. It's a very it certainly implicates them in the operation.
Well, see, that was part of Carnicom's genius, you know. The rat always comes to the cheese, don't they? And that was the rat coming to the cheese. Yeah, I've seen that list before, but years ago, and it's all real, every bit of it. But the international, I mean, just to throw out a company just by its initials, BAE Industries, but it's now BAE International. And who you've got on the board of directors of that, along with all these other corporate colonels and army generals and Pennac, you just retired. Lee Hamilton. Yeah, Lee Hamilton. Yeah, he's there. He is. Yeah, and
he's
on the commission.
911 cover-up commission.
Commission. Yeah.
Wasn't he also on the Oklahoma City one too?
Yes, he was. See, he just. The corruption doesn't end. It just never ends. So when it comes to whom are these beings, I guess we could spend the rest of our life talking about that kind of stuff. But quite frankly, I say I'm no respecters of any of them. I cannot get Dr. Ron Paul to make one comment about the chemtrails. Not one comment. I can't get John Tate, Campaign for Liberty. Will not make one comment. John Kasich, governor-elect here in Ohio just recently, not one comment will he, in fact, make on chemtrails. And I can tell you, if they know I'm coming after him, in fact, they know that's what I'm going to ask him. Kucinich, the same thing. Sherrod Brown, same thing. Senator Sherrod Brown, Dennis Kucinich, congressman, you know, what a wimp. The man is a wimp. I mean, because his H.R. 2977, in fact, was responsible many years ago, in fact, for memorializing the word chemtrails anyways.
You're talking about,
but guess what? He denies all of that. I mean, he just, what a wimp. The man's an absolute wimp.
Well, just to kind of fill people in on Kucinich, he authored a bill in 2003, I think, called the Space Preservation Act, where he at least ostensibly tried to ban from use chemtrails and other kinds of weather warfare and geoengineering and scalar things like that.
Exotic weapons.
Exotic weapons. And the kind of thing that were used in 911 and which are being used now in the geoengineering. And, of course, it didn't pass. But many people thought that he was going to be a champion of good causes. And as you say, apparently he has not followed through on that.
No,
you're saying that now he denies that he knows anything about it when before he was actually made a bill on that. Is that what you're
actually
saying?
Actually, they rewrote H.R. 2977. It was H.R. 3 something or other. I don't know. I remember stuff like that. But, no, they rewrote the bill, and guess what was left out of there? The definition section contained the word chemtrails, psychotronic weapons, and the other one we just talked about. Those were just omitted. Other exotic weapons, those were all, none of that was in there. No word about it whatsoever. So Has it been completely obfuscated? Yes. Matter of fact, I wrote Dennis Kucinich a personal letter. I sent it to him, to his office. I had gotten somebody notify me that his sister, Beth, was in the U.S. Army, I believe, down at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. I think it was Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Well, it's one of those irony things, you know, how it just kind of flows together. I'd been getting messages from, I get messages from people all over the world, but I'd been getting this thing. I mean, they're just really getting hammered with the chemtrails down there in the Carolinas and Tennessee, eastern, especially eastern Tennessee, and up through Kentucky and all that. Well, then I get this notification by somebody who said that Kucinich, I think I got it off one of his websites, said his sister passed away, and the only thing it said was she died of complications of respiratory, acute respiratory illness. Huh? Oh, wait a minute. Wow. Chemtrails got anything to do with this? So I wrote him a letter. And I offered him my personal condolences on the loss of his sister to death. But then I asked him just as figuratively and bluntly as I could, Dennis, do you suppose this has got anything to do with the chemtrails? You know, I never received a response from Dennis Kucinich even on that. So it tells me what kind of man that person is. And I've got no respect for anybody like that.
Yeah, well, you know, you had mentioned Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is one of the really kind of long-lasting figures in Washington or in the global scene. I mean, let me just give a quote here that comes out of, well, before I give the quote, I'll say that he co-founded the Trilateral Commission with David Rockefeller in 1973. He was the Secretary of State under Jimmy Carter in the 76 through 80. During that time, he brags that he lured Russia into the Afghan trap and then started a 10-year-long war, proxy war between the U.S. and Russia in Afghanistan, creating the Mujahideen and al-Qaeda and the Muslim extremists and the madrasas in the process, $3 billion CIA operation, which included, of course, Osama bin Laden, to make the terrorist networks. Anyway, Zbigniew Brzezinski is a major player. He's also one of the two major figures behind Obama, including George Soros and Zbigniew Brzezinski. In 1970, there's two books I'd like to mention. One is called The Grand Chessboard. In 1997, he wrote, and that talks about how America's going to have to dominate Eurasia. And that to do that, we're going to have to increase our military budget. And it's unlikely the American people are going to want to put all that money into military costs, absent a great catastrophe like a new Pearl Harbor. Okay, this came out about 4 years ahead of 9/11. So, and we saw the same kind of language in the Project for a New American Century. So these things tend to be scripted ahead of time. And in 1970, Brzezinski wrote a book called Between Two Ages. And here's the quote. Technology will make available to the leaders of major nations techniques for conducting secret warfare of which only a bare minimum of the security forces need to be apprised or need be appraised. Technology of weather modification could be employed to produce prolonged periods of drought or storm. Okay, says that in 1970. And I think the elements of that thing that are most important are this is covert warfare. People don't know about it. And only a few of the people that are actually doing it, only a few of the military need to be appraised.
The age of tectronics is the same mind that the Pol Pot massacre came out of.
Yeah.
Would you call this person a little bit soulless, would you say? In fact, they're all soulless, in fact, because that's the only thing that they've got on their brain, if they've got a brain, in fact, it's just death. Death and genocide to the earth. I mean, like I said, as far as I'm concerned, I will nominate. I wrote to Dr. Angie Miranda just this evening. She's over in the Philippines. So we've got a network of people across this globe and, I mean, across this world, and they're just wonderful, wonderful people. But they're just like we are. They're in there battling. They know all this stuff's going on, and they tell us stuff. We tell them things, you know. But we all agree on who's at the – at the pinnacle of these things. And these people are just the most, they're looked at and seen around this world as the most evil thing that you can possibly think of. I mean, as far as a man, so they're not really men, they're soulless. So you can't be a man and not have a soul. So,
well,
anyways,
you know, everybody's going to have a different opinion about, you know, that kind of thing. And you hear David Icke's into reptilians and other people are channeling spirits and blah, blah, blah. I'll just give my hypothesis, which is that they're just like you and me. They are human beings. They were brought into this earth in the traditional way. And they're going to leave in the traditional way. And these people have been, shall we say, co-opted by power and money, and yeah, you can call that evil because it certainly has evil consequences. But I think it's, and you could say it's satanic. A lot of people do say that the world power elite is satanic. That may be the case, but we don't have. But for now, we can identify who these people are. We can say that yeah, they look like people. They talk like people. And I think if we stick to the record of who said what when and, you know, what the implication of those policies has been to the world as a whole, then I think we're on safe ground. You know, I mean,
No, we could waste all our time talking about them, couldn't we?
Yeah, we can waste all our time talking about them. What we need to know about is the operations. Now, you had mentioned earlier an ozone mitigation operation. Now, we had talked to, and this is interesting because during the 90s especially and the late 80s, we were told that there was a hole in the ozone layer. Now, for our listeners, the fact is that there is a portion of the upper stratosphere between about 15 and 20 kilometers above the Earth that has dispersed O3 or ozone molecules. And yes, they are constantly being created and destroyed by incoming ultraviolet radiation. And in the late 80s, we were told there was a thinning of 50% over Antarctica in this layer. But come to find out, they've only had a couple years' worth of observations and measurements. So they just went way beyond their data. And they quickly pinned the blame on chlorofluorocarbon CFCs. And this was in all the journals and magazines. Turns out, according to Dr. Tim Ball in our recent interview, CFCs are four times heavier than air, and therefore they don't rise up into the upper stratosphere.
Exactly.
But what they do is they're an excellent refrigerant, which can preserve food for third world peoples, etc. And so by banning the use of CFCs, it's easier to have third world people in greater poverty. So it would seem that this also was a hoax. Now, if there was no thinning of the ozone, what in the world are we doing mitigating the ozone hole? If there's no ozone hole, what
HARPS.
Are they doing mitigating the ozone hole?
HARPS. HARPS, in fact, is causative of these massive holes that were being punched in the north latitudes of the Earth's sphere. They would just march around the entire top of the planet, and that's what got me into this to begin with, was that comment that I made to Ron Nix back in 1999 about that very thing, because I know that in fact that you can they've seen a lot of what was called black chemtrails. This, initially, that's what they were seeing. They just, the jet engine, in fact, were burning real dirty like they used to, but it wasn't the same color. Well, if you take selenium oxide, in fact, and pack it in with a hydrocarbon, a fuel, anything, an aromatic xylene, anything, and you put that in an aerosolized area and spray that, and let it fan out in that area of the atmosphere, 50,000 feet, 30,000 feet, or just above the troposphere, you in fact can create all the ozone you want. So when I seen these holes marching across the globe using Tom's satellite interferometry, using their own satellite interferometry that I was able to get on my internet back then, And all of a sudden they'd have these holes, and then you could see, like magic, like 2 days later, there would be this magenta colored patch where that hole once used to be. Now that hole is not a hole anymore. It's just huge square patch of magenta colored ozone. Magenta was indicative of the infrared color that signified that there was ozone in that area, fresh ozone that was coming from that satellite reading. So we know, and it was a square pattern. You know, he had round holes with square patches on it. So they were patching the ozone layer. There was no question about it, and it's very easy to do if you just, in fact, partially burn hydrocarbons here at the ground level and let it on a sunny day get on a hot sunny day get it to in fact generating ozone. It's relatively toxic, you know, so there's not too many good things about ozone in that regard there, but ozone is very, very functional. It does more things than just blocks UV ultraviolet light. It does so many other things, but nonetheless it's not that hard. But then again, they've been able to manipulate that. They've been able to manipulate all of that however they would like to do it. And I think that, in fact, by allowing the ultraviolet radiation and the actinic light to flood the Earth's surface in certain sectors like Australia, I'll just keep it there for right now, and other places on this globe, by choice, you, in fact, can literally burn somebody out of their civilization.
Okay, so you're saying that the quote-unquote hole, and it's not a hole, it's a thinning of the concentration of molecules of ozone in the upper stratosphere. You're saying that thinning is created by HARP electromagnetic radiation. Is that right?
Yes, right.
And how does that happen? What do they do that destroys the ozone molecule?
Well, there is obviously a disruption of the O3 with some of the magnetic dipole, the electromagnetic wave that's going through that portion of the atmosphere, because that is in fact lots of microwaves are in those ranges, and microwave in fact can impart those charges onto ozone or anything that's any gases that are in that vicinity. It doesn't have to be just ozone. It can be water vapor, cloud droplets, as we talked about before, other chemicals. It can be anything that can be in that vicinity and, in fact, can get them to react. And then you've got this problem with them putting ethylene dibromide in the in the stabilizer packages by Chevron Chemical into all aircraft fuels. In fact, jet fuels, in fact, are all heavily doped up with this stuff. And ethylene dibromide does a real number on the ozone layer. I can assure you of that.
Well, I think as long as, you know, what we got from Dr. Tim Ball is that the amount of ultraviolet radiation that comes in from the sun to the Earth's upper atmosphere varies by as much as 200%. We used to think that the amount of radiation given off by the sun was constant. We called it the solar constant. But now we know it's variable, and it would appear that the ultraviolet component of that solar radiation is especially variable. So changes in the natural flux of ultraviolet radiation would also have the effect, would have a big effect on the ozone layer. Let's go over to solar radiation management. This is a term that you read about by the geoengineers. Now, you mentioned Ken Caldera. He and people like Keith and the various others, I would not put them in the same category as the real bad guys, the evil guys. I would say they're scientists who are happy to be able to do something that matters. I think perhaps they're largely naive. They might think that what they're doing...
Well, yeah, they don't have any regard for the consequences of what they're doing either. So that's exactly why I kind of break off with them, and whatever science, in fact, that they think they're doing is good.
Well,
I depart from that, you know. They probably are. They probably are. But I break away from that.
They are. They're at university.
They don't care about the consequences.
They get grants. They want to be players. Most of these people would be, I think, duped into thinking that there was a crisis and that it was man-caused global warming and that it needs to be fixed. I think most of them would buy into that. And the reason I think that is that most professionals, most academics, tend to respect other academics, and they say, well, if you guys say this and that's your considered opinion, then, we're not going to question that because, we know how hard we work in our field. We assume you do the same thing in your field. And so there's this kind of a professional respect. What they don't know is that the global warming debate has been skewed by deliberate political influence and money influence, so that the scientists involved in it, such as the Phil Jones and the Michael Manns, et cetera, have lost all their connection to integrity, or at least most of it. I might be wrong, but I'm thinking that these atmospheric scientists, like Caldera and Keith, have integrity. They are trying to address a problem. They think they would like to be able to help. I think that this concept of Edward Teller, who knows about him? He's been called Dr. Strangelove, but he's of the opinion that humans should geoengineer the Earth's atmosphere and weather, and that this is our goal and it's our responsibility. Another guy named Keller, also out of Lawrence Livermore, is sometimes called, I think, Dr. Wood, called Dr. Evil. These guys are believers. They believe that it is humans' prerogative as the dominant species here to control natural systems. And again, I don't think that they are, I think they're crazy, by the way, but I think that this is a view that is, an honest view.
Do you think they're well programmed?
What's that?
Very good, Melanie. That's a very good way of stating it. I think you're right.
Wait, what was your statement, Melanie?
I said, are they well programmed?
Well, I mean, I think you could look at a higher education as a programming institution. I mean, what Noam Chomsky said was, in this country, 80% are the bewildered herd, and for the remaining 20% who could get it, we have the most intensive propaganda system of all, and that's university.
That's right.
And in a way, that's true, because, I look at my experience in the university, and I was one who taught, guess what, global warming, guess what, the ozone hole, guess what, acid rain. This is in the textbooks. But you talk to an expert and you start to look at each one of these things critically, and you realize that they're all frauds. And so people, smart, well-intentioned people are paying money to go to school and learning some propaganda. Now, it's hopefully not all propaganda, but they're certainly learning some propaganda. And these guys are well-programmed. But that doesn't mean that they're not, well-intentioned. And so I wouldn't write them off. I would say, let's talk to these people. Let's point out.
Well, I think you got a good point, Eric, if I can just say. That's a good point. I only know Caldera from afar. I don't really know him. But I've heard remarks saying that they think he's well-intentioned. Okay, but I won't give you 2 cents for your intentions until I see what you're doing. Because if you've got zero regard for let's just call it the groundfall of these chemistries and these technologies and these weapons that, in fact, are falling upon the Earth, not just on humans and impacting them irreversibly, but also all other life forms on the planet. And I've got no regard for your science whatsoever, Mr. Caldera. That's my point. If he can't have it in his heart, if he could do what he's doing and take no more money for it, just ban from it completely and go off and try to do this, what he's in fact wanting to get done, and not take any money for it, not take any federal research dollars, not take any academia dollars for it, just go do it on his own. But he's going to have some regard for the outfall. You ever heard of Morgellon syndrome? I'm certain that you have, Eric.
Yeah, please tell us about it.
Well, see, this is another one of their their twists, their aberrations of science. It's a pseudoscience, actually, because they're actually pseudo life forms. They're not really alive as we know what life is or what we understand what life is. But be it as it may, it's very infestatious. It's being used and has been used as weather control. And I can tell you, your dog don't like it either. So, it's an insidious technology that, and Clifford Carnicom, has made some very bold and brazen statements. And I do believe what he in fact says. Matter of fact, I've got faith in him. We've all been infested with the seeds of these things called Morgellons fibers, which are in fact self-replicating nanosystems, self-replicating nanobots. They're using things that your body pulls in. Wash your hands with 9 moles ethylene oxide surfactant, you get absorption. Dry your clothes with one of them things you throw in the dryer and it gets Teflon on you. Eat food that's been fixed in a nonstick pan with Teflon on it. Guess what? These little things that self-replicate use that residue that comes through your body not to detoxify you, but to, in fact, to utilize that in a form of an aberrant genase, however they work. Now, my mind understands a lot of things when it comes to fungal forms. I mean, this is rhizomic, and it in fact replicates, and it collapses your own body's cells, and in fact pulls everything off the DNA strand and utilizes these components. It's just absolutely fascinating how it does all this. But these replicators can do this, but they're using things from your. But these seeds are in your bloodstream. Clifford Carnicom, in fact, has a hypothesis that he, in fact, believes that we're all infected with these. Because every blood sample that he's looked at for years, and I can't speak for Clifford Carnicom, I just remember what he said and I read his papers. Every single one of them had these little clusters in them, which were the primordial seed sets. They're little fractals is what they are. Little black little fractals, that's what I called them because that's what they look like. But somehow they're out of these emerge these fibers. And then, in fact, they replicate and become more fibers with very odd, bizarre-looking, chimera-like things on them.
It's a little the story of Frankenstein. Create a monster.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
God, you know. But would you say that this is nanotechnology? That is
absolutely
made by some corporation?
Absolutely. It was invented, and the patents, in fact, MIT holds some of the patents, and it's just endless at the things that have been developed. And, of course, that became the buzz hot word, nanotech. Hey, nano, 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 nano. And that was also what Ort said, wasn't it? Nano, nano.
As I recall, just from reading through some paper, the point of the fibers is that they would, like a spider web, they would stay in the atmosphere longer. They would be lighter, they'd be picked up by breezes, and they would do their work, whatever it is, reflecting or absorbing radiation, heating or cooling or whatever they're supposed to do. They would stay in the atmosphere longer. Now, there may be a more sinister intent for these things, but do you have any sense of which corporation manufactures them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which corporation manufactures them?
Yeah, I'll have them coming after me tomorrow. That's okay.
We'll take it to
a lighter side instead of, because there's more than one of everything, okay? They don't ever go with just one supplier.
Okay.
I can assure you that. But many of these things come from overseas, like the chemicals that are used. The barium and aluminum, I can tell you the barium, in fact, came from China. But it didn't come on a boat and didn't come on a plane. It came on a tube. And the tubes come all over the place. They're all over the place. And if you're not familiar with any of that, then let's don't go into it tonight, okay? Let's don't go into it tonight. But the tube is the big word. But what I was talking about was Morgellons. See, these are technologies. Now, I know that Calderia knows about these technologies. He's been apprised. He's been asked questions. Will he answer it? No, they won't say a thing. But see, it's when they, in fact, stand somewhere and say that they really believe that these technologies, in fact, will save our planet. I'm standing there screaming, I don't want you to save our planet. I don't want you to do anything except get out of my face, because you are dangerous, Mr. Caldera, Mr. Weiss.
I think it was the intention. There's a Keith up at the University of Calgary. There's a
Otmar Edenhofer.
Yeah, there's a definite kind of sense that people are playing God, and that they feel like they have the knowledge and the right to play God, not only with their environment but with everybody's environment.
See how wrong you can be?
Yeah.
See how wrong they can be?
Yeah, I think that's a hubris on a colossal scale. And like you say, okay, let's hear about your law, the 2003 Preservation Act. Could you tell us the basics of that?
Okay, what it would do, it's a Unified Atmospheric Preservation Act of 2008. I wrote it in 2003 initially, and then I kept updating it. I done it in 2005, and then I done it in 2008. That's the one I sent out to Bart Gordon at the House of Representatives on Science and Technology. You know, God, he was like somebody sent him up. I won't say it on the air, but somebody's, you know, he squirmed. People squirm when they, in fact, hear of me, or they know I'm coming, or I'm going to send them this. They do not want to hear this because they just know this is such a big thing across this planet. Who are they? And they know we're trying to knock down. We're in a battle. We're in a battle for our atmosphere, for our breathable air column. What it would do, it prohibits and does, in fact, forever, let's just say, curtail the release, dispensement, spraying, or otherwise released into our breathable air column any chemical, element, compound, gas, or other extraneous materials from an aircraft of any sort. I don't care if it's a UFO, a flying saucer, a jet aircraft, a Gulfstream, I don't care what it is. You do not dispense that from the air. Well, what about fire retardants? No fire retardants, because you guys don't know how to use them. How many times did you see them choppers and those big planes, in fact, go over an entire forest with one of those fire retardants, and like, they miss. And it's still blazing when they get done putting, as you idiots, you know. I'm a pilot too, but I could do a better job of that. But they're putting something relatively innocuous, retardants made from iron oxides, and ferrites, but the point is, we don't want anything put into our atmosphere from an air. We do not want a demission. If it's an emission, it goes up. If it's a demission, it's coming down. We don't want anything put into our atmosphere ever, forever, because this is not just our breathable air. This is the entire planet's air. And you've got no right to industrialize our breathable air column, and we want to take it down. The Unified Atmospheric Preservation Act was written to also be an international agreement. And you would not believe the hoorays that I've got from across this world on, let's make this the same thing here in Russia. We'd like to have this. We've got emails from people that, in fact, are able to communicate up with what they're thinking. We've got to get some of this stuff stopped. But they're just like you and I and Melody, Eric. They're just like us. They're just regular people that want to live tomorrow. But see, well, sure. We're not sure if the sunrise is going to sunrise tomorrow. It might be occluded by more chemtrails or HARPs, in fact, keep knocking us up and down, and they're pulling us out of our elliptics and so on and so on. And all that's occurring, whether you can, in fact, improve it or not. All that is occurring
because of these weapons. So many studies. Show that this really began in earnest around 1990, or maybe even the late 1980s, maybe 88, 89. So we've had 20 years now. We're not dead yet. So, you know, I don't think we need to worry about the sun coming up tomorrow. But I think that, you know, obviously it needs to be addressed. Now, in Japan, apparently just recently, the United Nations passed a moratorium on geoengineering, which sounds a little bit like your Atmosphere Preservation Act. So it occurs to me that perhaps what we're seeing is the United States and NATO being the bad cop, and now the UN trying to come in as the good cop. We're now going to have global problems for global solution, or global solutions for global problems, and you know, all these countries with their nasty militaries have done this bad geoengineering, but we're now, as an international body, going to regulate it. So this again puts them back into the driver's seat and maybe gets them into kind of a world government kind of a capacity, which is what they've always wanted.
They can't regulate anything. I've publicly called now for the last 2 months on virtually every radio show that I've done, internet and otherwise. I want, starting with here in Ohio, I'm hoping that Governor-elect John Kasich is listening, and I always have. I want him to, in fact, to dissolve the Ohio EPA. I've worked with these people and the ones in Indiana and all over the United States and the regional EPAs and the federal EPA for over 20 years. And I'm not going to say I'm no respecter of them. I do. They think they're doing well. They may have had some place in there. But other than that, they're really relatively useless. They only make their money by issuing permits based on rules that, in fact, are archaic and make no sense whatsoever. Issue permits and fees and fines and go out and sting operations and shut down small businesses left and right, left and right, left and right. They're virtually useless when it comes to our American way of life of doing things, because these small businesses that they're shutting down, this was not, they didn't do anything intentionally. They may have had accidents. And then there's the corruption, the graft. Most of these people that work with the Environmental Protection Agency end up working for these big contractors. Like I gave testimony to Congress in 1997, along with one of my colleagues, about the federal EPA, regional EPA in Philadelphia. There's a guy by the name of Greg Hamm. He was a senior project, whatever title they gave him, made about $50,000 a year working for the regional EPA. Well, we were wanting to clean up this place called Havertown, Pennsylvania. Havertown, Pennsylvania had the one of the oldest, if not the oldest, Superfund sites on it in the United States, going back to 1972. It was an old wood treater site with pentachlorophenols and all these other things. They used to treat the log in open pits. Well, all this stuff, in fact, it crept into the aquifers and the waters and so on and so forth, and God, it was horrendous, terrible. Well, anyways, we wanted to clean it up. We had our own technologies and co-treatments that would do that. Well, we got to looking at it, and we found out that there was a company that had just been ever since 1972, had been monitoring and managing it. They'd made about $8 million since then, just monitoring and managing it. Not one quart of water was cleaned up. Not one teaspoon of soil, in fact, was cleaned up as well. Nothing was cleaned up. They just monitored and managed it. These were on 10-year programs and stents. They didn't clean them up. So, in fact, we gave testimony to Congress. It didn't make a darn bit of difference. And, yeah, I sat in front of, McIntosh from Indiana asked me to come in here and testify. And so I did, me and Don Paris out of Florida. He was one of my business associates at the time. And there's Henry Waxman sitting there like a draconian on the far left, you know, just ticked as he could be that we were given testimony against the EPA. Oh, yeah. Well, anyways, so be it as it may, it made no difference whatsoever, but we testified about Superfund sites being papered over because Greg Hamm seems to, in fact, had landed a different job now when we went there to testify. Seems that OH Materials, in fact, was now paying him like $80,000 a year, a desk job. Yeah, but that was the company that got the contract for $30.2 million to clean up Havertown, Pennsylvania, by putting asphalt on top of the area that was impacted. After all those years, yeah, putting a cap on it, putting asphalt on top of it, and then they were going to increase their pump and treat. They were going to pump the water out of the ground and go through a barrel of carbon, and it was going to drip through there for 10 or 15 years on a 10-year stent permits, 30-point-some million dollars. That's what they were going to. And Greg Hamm had to sign an agreement that he would never set foot on that site again because he more or less got the contract for them. And this is what goes on every single day with, I don't care if you're the Environmental Protection Agency in Ohio or if you're at the DNR in other states. I don't care what it is. It's so graft full of greasy, unbelievable corruption. Indiana is just unbelievable. It's unbelievable with the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. Those people are just absolute criminals. They're absolute criminals. And well, they know I talk like this about them.
Yeah, and of course, Vaclav Klaus, who's the head of the European Union, says environmentalism is the new communism. And I think there's a real case to be made that the EPA and other environmental groups have kind of abandoned their good guy identity, and they are a force for destruction. It's not that they're useless; it's that they're destructive.
It is.
As you
You're
say,
right.
They should be disbanded. Yeah.
I mean, and Kasich, governor-elect Ohio, can knock off at least $300 million just with the Ohio EPA. Now, if he takes the DNR also, in fact, just in Ohio, there's at least a couple hundred million dollars. There's almost close to a billion dollars or more that could come right off that budget. I mean, I'm really giving you conservative figures, I know. Kasich knows what they are. But what I'm saying is we can do things so much better in this because we don't have that much industry left. All they're doing is camping out on these poor souls. Every single, because I still have one or two clients out there that I still consult. I still do quarterly VOC reports for some of them, you know, bless the printing companies. But, I mean, you know, there's hardly anybody left out here. But they're just, they're constantly getting fines and got fees being charged to them. And it's such a shame. But nonetheless, those people need to find something else to do in life. But I want that to expand itself to the regional influence that we have and our Superfund sites that have never been cleaned up. They've only been papered over. And I can show and prove that. Get rid of the regional EPAs and their corrupt influence. By the way, ours comes out of Chicago, if that tells you anything. Waste management's also in Chicago. So, and then we could take it to the federal EPA. And yeah, I sent Christine Todd Whitman a letter in 2002, and I appealed to her, because I do not beg. I appealed to her to please look into this that I'm trying to describe called chemtrails in brief. Aerosolized heavy metal particulates, and I know she knows about it because she was formerly over in New Jersey, and I did come across her path one other time. I never met her though, and she was governor, but I did come across. But anyways, what I in fact got from that letter to Christine Todd Whitman about the chemtrails, I got a phone call and virtually Deep Throat gave me a death threat on the phone. Yeah, okay. That's what I got for it.
Okay,
so
gentlemen.
I want all these people just to, in fact, to dissolve into the darkness again or find something else to do in life. But we do not need the EPAs, the Department of Natural Resources, and all these other corrupt individuals that are the infestation of the Forest Service by the CIA. Everybody knows that happened many years ago. It's just so evil and vile and corrupt. Eric, I just can't go on that far because I know you know a lot about this stuff, but it's all for some other discussion. But see, that's just my temperament. That's just my personality. I've always been independent. I've never, ever taken one dime of any kind of contract that ever was, in fact, originated or supported by the state, federal, or anybody else. I've never taken a contract, or would I? I, in fact, will not. I never got a dime for any of the things we've done out of Havertown, Pennsylvania. And I'm glad I didn't, because once we got to in there, we ended up going to Tom River, New Jersey, and Ciba Geigy and Sandoz Chemical, which became Novartis.
I see we need to continue.
The beat goes on. The beat goes on, I can tell you.
I see we need to continue this conversation and maybe do this again another day, because I do have some other guests coming up next, but I do want to bring this to a close, and I want to thank you, Dr. Mike Castle and Dr. Carlstrom for another excellent discussion. Any closing thoughts, you two?
Well, I would just like to say I'd like to thank Michael for joining us because it is becoming clear to a lot of people that there is this spraying operation going on. that indeed material is being put into the sky. The government has denied it and tells us that it's not happening, but there is abundant evidence that it is happening. So therefore, as we are not being told what's happening by the government, we have to somehow find out. We have to talk about it. We have to look at the range of possibilities. There's a number of good movies on this. B. Edward Griffin just came out with What in the World Are They Spraying, which I think should galvanize some discussion. There's California Skywatch's movie called Skylines. There's the New York Skywatch movie called Geoengineering. There's the Weather Warfare show, the History Channel. There's just the chemtrails video from Carnicom.com. There's just a lot of materials out there. There's books, Chemtrails Confirmed by William Thomas. There's a number of books on HARP by Nick Begich and Jerry Smith, et cetera. So the information's out there. We need to get smart on this. We need to, and fortunately we do have radio, we do have internet. And so that's why I really appreciate Michael sharing his research and his results and his thoughts and his facts with us. So thanks for joining us.
Okay, I want to say thank you.
And
good night.
Okay, good night. And we'll do it again sometime. I appreciate your overview and your comments very much, and Melody, yours as well. And we just got to keep on going this direction. We're going to get these stopped one way or another, even if it hair lips the governor, okay? We're going to get these stopped.
Okay.
You have a good night, both of you two. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Good night.
Okay, good night.